This is an interview with Ariel Bean on July 25th, 2003.
You have a long list of subjects we can talk about. Suppose we talk about the one of the early jobs that you had in La Grande. Was it with the railroad?
Well, I worked for the railroad in 1942. I ended up working out on the rip track.
What is a rip track?
Well, this is where they brought in all of the box cars that they were refitting that way and equipping, remodeling them so that they would be able to haul heavier freight.
Is a rip track like a siding track?
It was a siding. It had a it was open on the sides, but it had a long roof over it.
Now, and where was that in relation to the present La Grande Depot?
Well, this was all, shall I say, north of the depot.
Yeah.
At one time, there was a walkway that went across the tracks there on the west end of the depot someplace. But this was, all of this was north of the depot. In fact, if you went on Monroe and followed it on around where it curves, comes over to 4th Street, you would have been closer to this material.
How did you happen to get this job?
Wasn't asked for it.
Well, what did that involve, going up to the superintendent there?
Well, I don't remember who was in charge, but they were looking for help there. In fact, they brought a bunch of fellows over from Nampa to work what they called carmen or cartage. To work in the various areas. The rip track was just a siding, and well, of course, you could say the same thing, I suppose, for the back shop or the roundhouse. Roundhouse was where they did engine maintenance that could be handled, and or didn't mean tearing down boilers or anything. They did that over in the back shop. But there were a lot of fellows that were working there that year.
When you applied for that job, what skills did you bring to it? Strength?
Muscle.
Yes. But it required a certain amount of skill, didn't it, from what you described?
Well, I was a carman's helper, is what it amounted to, finally. And so he was in charge of giving the directions, or they told him, and then he told us what to do, and we worked along with him. We used a pneumatic drill to ream out the rest of the rivets where we burned them out, so that this spider could be dropped out and reamed out and then put back in with larger rivets.
Would you explain what the spider is again?
Well, the spider is a sort of a square box of heavy metal, steel, which sits on the trucks. That's the wheels for the and the rest of the carriage put together, which are in the front and the back of a boxcar. And I don't know, private parlance, maybe I shouldn't say it, but all that connects that is about a 2-inch metal round piece that goes up into the spider and down into the trucks, and that's all that holds that thing together.
These boxcars probably would have been made, what, maybe 25 years before you were working on them? So we're getting old?
Well, goodness only knows what the age of them might be. What they did, they'd take up part of the floor on each end so you could get in there and work this. And then that was replaced, and they were usually repainted and sent back out on the road, but it was so that they could haul a heavier load without pulling things apart, I guess.
Did you ever find out why La Grande was chosen for that kind of repair?
Well, it used to be a division point, I think. In other words, the road crews ran from about Nampa to here, and then from here on over, they figured that by the time the engineer made that run, he'd put in a day's work. And of course, back in the old days, when you were running steam, your fireman was probably pretty much worn out from shoveling coal before he'd made all that trip. So
But repairing boxcars seems like a different thing from just running trains.
Well,
was LeGrand so well equipped for making repairs? That's why it was chosen?
Well, they had the roundhouse for engines. They had the back shop, which they could do the boiler work in. They had the rip track, which could do this. In other words, it was a division point. All that stuff was moved over to Hinkle eventually.
Could it be that at that time, the LeGrand was made a division point and there was work here in order to help support the community?
I don't know as to that. All I know is that I kind of figured on the day's work for the road crews when they came from Idaho this way or from the west this way. And of course, you realize that to get in and out of here, that a big train, a boxcar, would have to have helper engines to get over the grade. You see, you've got to climb from here until you get past Baker and start in the Pleasant Valley. Then you begin to go downhill. But you got to pick up from about Farewell Bend, you got to help them all the way up that hill and in. And then, of course, you got the same thing going over the top until you can start drop down into Umatilla County.
How long were you working at this freight car repair job?
I just was there that summer because I was trying to make some money so I could go to school, and I needed to go away to get in on what I wanted to do. They wanted me to have a lot of physics and math so I could get in, I wanted to get into Air Corps to fly. And that's what they said, you had to have a lot of physics and math in order to get in. So that's what I was working on.
Well, while the time you were working there that summer, did you get to know the other men fairly well?
Well, yeah, but that was a long time ago and my memory's shot for the most part.
I was just wondering if you could give me some sense of what these men's attitudes were and what they talked about and how much you respected them.
Well, respect was one thing. First of all, it was a dirty place to work. Everybody wore an extra set of overalls because you couldn't sit down anywhere without getting grease or soot or dirt on you. And they weren't well known for their genteel language.
Well, that's what I suspected, yes.
And I didn't work with very many of them. The guys that I was, when I was assigned to, was one of these that moved over from Tampa, and his best buddy was in the soup because he'd been chasing around some woman here when they came over, and when he moved his wife over, that caused complications. They ended up living next door or something, and, you know, for a young kid, trying to behave himself, you know, that's not too much of an example.
My understanding is that during that period, there were a good many prostitution services available in LeGrand for railroad workers and mill workers. Did you observe that was the case?
I don't know anything about it except that I knew a kid I was going to school with that worked for the laundry. And he said he could tell them apart by whatever they turned in for laundry. Now that's all I know about it.
Tell who apart?
The prostitutes.
Tell them apart from respectable women, you mean?
Well, no, you can tell them, you can tell them apart this one from that one.
Oh. Well.
Now that's all I know about it.
Okay. I guess we'll just leave that to speculation.
Well, it could deserve a lot of speculation, I suspect.
Were you aware that there were brothels all along Jefferson Avenue?
The only ones I was aware of, I think, were on First Street up overhead.
The building that's still there?
It's still there,
painted gray.
In fact, I think the upstairs entry is right next to the alley there. And
yeah.
It's across the street from the old Salvation Army.
Did it have any sort of sign or red light?
Not that I remember. I don't know whether it had one or not.
What did you observe about the taverns that probably many railroad men frequented?
Don't know a thing about them. I didn't.
No, I wouldn't expect
they wouldn't let me in anyway. I was underage.
No. you were about 18 or then?
Yeah, that summer. That summer, yeah, I would have been 19.
Mm-hmm. What I'm aiming at here is your perception of whether La Grande was fairly a wide-open town at that time.
I don't have any idea. I was living out here and I stayed home at night for the most part, unless it was a ball game or something.
You just went into work and then went home.
Yeah, well, from 7:30 to 3:30, and then we had a garden here, and there's always stuff to do at home,
sure,
too.
Sure. There were some eatery places, weren't there?
Well, yeah, there were a whole bunch of those. The Yellow Dog was a little one that was on Fur, on the same side of the street as Zimmerman's, and but across the alley and down two or three doors. And it was just kind of a narrow walk-in place. It wasn't a big restaurant. The Lavender Lunch was on...
Before you go to that, the Yellow Dog, would you just go in and order a hot dog and then take it out to eat?
I don't remember. I was in there with my dad a few times, but I don't remember for sure. It seemed to me like there was a very small table or something back to back where you could eat. But, yeah, I think we took ours out, though.
Was it patronized mostly by men?
I don't know.
Well, with a name like Yellow Dog, I'd expect it to be for men.
I would presume you're right. The Lavender Lunch.
Lavender Lunch, yeah. That sounds more refined.
It was down on, Depot Street, across from where Mama Cita's, the old J.C. Penney building is across the street from that, right there on the alley.
Wasn't that the Summer Hotel building?
Well, it was in the same block. I don't know if that's part of the building or not.
It
might have been.
Mm-hmm.
That was a little fancier place, though.
Do you remember how it looked?
No, I don't. It too long ago.
You didn't go in there?
Yeah, I was in there, but good night.
Oh, but
you asked me about some 60 years ago.
Well, some of these details.
It's been out of business for 50 probably,
yeah,
or more.
I've heard several people mention it, but nobody's described it. Do you think it had tablecloths? And waiters or waitresses?
I couldn't tell you. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you go down to the Green Parrot Grill, that was a little bit, that was down over the telephone building.
It was really part of the Foley Hotel, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. They were Foley.
Right. Do you remember that one better?
Well, it was, of course, you had these shade trees out there in front of it at that time, too, on Adams, which disappeared eventually, and then they tried to replace. But it had booths. And as I recall, yeah, they had somebody to wait on you. I don't know, the waiter or waitress or whatever. And I think you could get a pretty good meal for a dollar, if I remember right.
Home cooked, I suppose you'd say.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I think that, whatever it was. High school kid didn't eat out all that much.
I wouldn't know.
Except you could go across the street from the old high school, over on the, what would be the southeast corner of 4th and Adams, and Mrs. Needier had a beauty parlor in one part of it, but you could go in and get a nickel hamburger one time when you're in high school. Yeah, that's what you got. You got the bun, you got the meat. I think you may have furnished a ketchup and mustard, but that was all for a nickel.
That's as close as we came to a fast food restaurant at that time, huh?
Yeah, I would think so. You know, you get over there during noon hour time, and have some. But there are quite a few kids that go over there and do that every once in a while. Which reminds me of grocery stores. You're talking about food. You know, there used to be a lot of little ones around town.
Yes.
When there aren't there anymore, there's, oh goodness.
There may be three left, I think.
Well, there's a one on Spruce.
There's a Willow Street one.
And the Willow Grocery, and what used to be Sinden's, where, Wayne Simone's had it for a while now. I think somebody else has got it down there on Fur and Y.
Say that name again.
Sinden.
Sinden, S-Y-N?
No, S-I-N-D-E-N, I think.
D-E-N, okay.
I'd have to look up the spelling. Jean went to school with the daughters of the Sindens. Yeah, but there used to be one across from Riveria School. And then there, let's see, Joel's, of course.
Yes.
You probably got that one.
Mm-hmm.
You can talk to Jerry Binger about
yes.
that. He knows more than I do.
Yeah.
A family named Mills had one on about 1st and L, somewhere right in there. And then there's, of course, 4th Street Grocery, which is now the Curves for Women thing. And then there was one on, was on C. I can't remember, was on corner 2nd Street or 3rd Street. I was wondering, I'd have to go look. I know which one it is if I go look, but I don't remember now. And
what's your explanation for why there were so many neighborhood groceries?
Well, during the Depression, a lot of people jacked up their automobiles and left them in the garage and walked. And so, if you could walk to the grocery store, it was a lot easier than trying to go clear downtown to where Safeway or Piggly Wiggly or something else happened to be. And
you think that people bought nearly all of their groceries at those places?
I don't know. You could go, of course, milk, you know, was delivered.
Yeah.
And if you let it sit out in the cold, the next day you might find the milk, the paper milk cap on the old milk bottle is about an inch, inch and a half up above the top of the bottle because
yeah.
of the, I don't know whether it ever broke any bottles, but it froze a few.
Do you remember shopping yourself at one of these neighborhood groceries?
No, because first of all, my dad had a car. As a rural mail carrier, that was a necessity. He was always making car payments because of that. He found that, and of course, the roads weren't paved in those days. They were gravel if you were lucky, and rough, and field level, and the snow drifted them in a lot of times. And so he found that about 30,000 miles was time to start over with a new one. So he was making car payments most of his life.
This is sort of parenthetical, but was the post office paying him in any way for the use of his car?
They paid him mileage, but it didn't pay. It paid, just barely paid for the gas and the oil and so on, maybe tires. It didn't pay for the car, but his car.
I think we would say now that he was being ripped off.
Well, in a sense, you could say that because when the Depression hit, they lowered his wages $500 with the promise he'd get it back when things got better. But in there, he was still working for him when he died in 1954, and he never got it back.
Spent a lifetime being ripped off.
Well, but the thing about it is he had a job when a lot of people didn't have during the Depression.
Mm-hmm. Well, back to the neighborhood groceries. You yourself didn't shop in them?
Not for groceries. My mother dealt with, I don't know, I don't think that we had a charge account like a lot of them did, you know, during that time.
Many people, I think, could run up a bill and pay it once a month or once every 2 months, whatever they could manage.
They were carried for whatever, a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Due to the fact that we had farm out there and sold cream to the Union Creamery. Why, they could draw butter and cheese against, you know, the cream. So we had that going for a while on that end of things. But I can remember going to a grocery store with a $20 bill to buy enough groceries for a family of four and a couple of hired men for a month. And let me see, a Waldo Geddes was a grocer here in town, but I think that grocery store was, I don't know, I think it was in the block across from Penny's too.
That'd be G-A-D-D-I-S?
G-E-D-D-E-S.
G-E-D-D-E-S.
Uh-huh. And I know she traded with him quite a bit and sometimes sent me in for stuff. I remember he suckered me into biting into a green persimmon one time. It was free, but he was that kind of a joker. But I don't know, you know, where Once in a while, we might go to one of these small grocery stores or something. If you know, they kept all kinds of hours to accommodate people. Sure.
What would be your estimation about the importance of these neighborhood groceries for social exchange? Not just buying groceries, but gossip and all the other kinds of things that help to build the fabric of a community.
I don't know that I can answer that one. In a sense, I suppose they did act in it as a maybe a little neighborhood center. The fact that some of them are still going is a pretty good indication of that. Otherwise, because basically that's the people that are supporting the thing are those that are close by, or at least it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
That's not so much the case anymore because people drive out to, well, look out the strip or look right out there, grocery stores.
I think it was common, too, for the owner of the grocery to live right in the same building, wasn't
yes,
it?
Yes, I think so.
Made it a little easier to have those long hours.
Oh, I forgot two of them, too. Over Highway Grocery was one of them there, across the street from Safeway, where H.O. Nelson's got his emporium now.
Mm-hmm.
That was a grocery store, Highway Grocery, one time. Then where you make the turn out there across the street from Wendell's, that was a log cabin grocery.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually had the appearance of a log cabin.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think it was Smith family that ran that one, if I remember right. They had a daughter named Bunny, and my dad was always teasing her and asking her if she could wiggle her nose like a bunny. But, and I don't know that I've got them all in that I remember even. But, you know, that would be what kept them going.
Yeah.
It would be the general neighborhood.
The La Grande City directory is a pretty good source for all the names of the groceries. Dorothy Fleshman has numerous copies of the old directory.
I worked for them in 1948 when they made that one. The city
directory?
I went to every house west of Greenwood and north of the railroad track, plus some others in town, and also in Vernelgen.
And you had to ask questions?
Well, the fellow that was running it from Polk, R.L. Polk and Company,
yep,
had a series of file cards, and he'd give you some of those for your territory,
mm-hmm,
and you'd go out to verify the information on it,
mm-hmm,
and ask them if they wanted to be in the new directory. They had a choice.
Oh.
And guy should show up with that card and verify the information, ask them if they wanted to be in. I got invited into more places in that part of town I'd ever been in before. There are a lot of people that want somebody to talk to.
Yes.
And I think that's still the case.
Uh-huh.
Total stranger, and they invite me in and start telling me their troubles. I have a hard time getting your day's work done that way. But
I imagine you just had a few factual questions to ask, didn't you?
Yeah, you know, the name, the address, telephone number, and whether they wanted to be in the directory or not. In other words, and whether they still lived there or not. If you didn't, you made out a new card for the people.
Did you also ask how many people lived in the house?
Well, yeah, you had the names of the ones that were there.
Mm-hmm.
You ran into some peculiar situations,
uh-huh,
too, but ménage, what is the French say, ménage à trois or something like that?
Ménage à trois.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But,
since you worked for that, you must have had some impression about the importance of the city directory at the time.
Well, it must have been important enough that they paid for it with advertising, basically, I think, or from contributions of those businesses in whatever town.
Well, what were you thinking at the time was the reason for having one?
I didn't pay any attention to the reason.
Just
it was just a job.
Okay.
When they got through with that, I went to work for a while with the city engineer.
Was this all before you went to college?
No, this was all before I went to work out in Inver during that summer.
Oh, I see. Teaching 7th grade out there.
Yeah, 7th and 8th grade, being the grade school principal, okay, and coaching sports and driving bus and whatever
else.
Were
you still in college when you were doing these jobs?
No, I graduated. I graduated in March, I think, and finished up. So this was that period
until
that September anyhow. But the city engineer at that point, we did two things I can remember. We went to the cemeteries in town and put down all of the information that we could read off of the stones at that time. In Hillcrest, the Catholic one in Grandview. And he did all the fancy stuff to draw the plats and everything in there after we got the information. The other thing we did, I ran the stick and he ran the surveyor's instrument. I thought it was more of a level than anything. And we had the manhole covers off of all the manholes we could find in town, and he took the depths and so on. And I think as a result of the work we did that summer that they put in the storm sewer, the sanitary and the storm all went the same disposal system to begin with, and it was overcrowded by population and storms. They came down M Avenue would come down from way up to the west, down that hill, and when they got enough water going in the catch basins from the storm, the thunderstorm or whatever, the manhole cover at the bottom of 6th Street Hill was lifted off of the cover because of the water pressure going on out. So they were in the process of changing all of that.
At that time, where do you think all of the sewage and the runoff water went?
Where did it go?
Yeah.
Well, it went to that old disposal plant. That's where the Pepsi-Cola bottling place is, or close to it. And then when they got through treating
pond?
It,
was it an open pond?
Yeah, it was all open. When they got through treating it, it went in that ditch that went on out across the valley someplace. I'd have to go out and trace that, but it went down along the railroad track. And then I think it turned and, where the sales yard is presently, cattle and so on. I think that ditch went on past there and on out across. I don't know whether they used it for irrigation or what out there further. But I can tell you that where you live, the stream coming down there out of Deal Canyon.
Yeah, it used to come down there.
It still does.
In a pipe, yeah.
Uh-huh. That goes under the sidewalk on First Street. And part of it goes down this way under the high school. That's why the high school auditorium has been flooded a time or two.
Oh, yeah.
Because of the pressure coming through. They didn't put in big enough pipe to handle it. That goes down to, I think it's I Avenue, and then goes over and joins up with Mill Canyon, all goes under the college over there somewhere until it comes out down below. The other half of it goes down first to Jefferson and comes around, and it used to go down the alley between Adams and Jefferson. Well, when this big flood hit in 65, I think it was, put water in the basement of the stores, Globe Furniture and Zimmerman's, I don't know, all. They finally redid that one and put in a bigger flow down. I think they tore up Jefferson and took it down. It goes across the underpass and goes into a ditch there. But all of that stuff came in a later time as a result of what the city engineer was working on that summer when I worked with him.
Did you get any information about who may have designed the first sewer system for LeGrand?
Oh, good night, nurse. No, that was...
That would have been about 18...
He had some plats and so on, so of all of it, but they weren't complete. Like from the old, Purdy's Dutch windmill, there was a little 4-inch line ran out of there down to Pennsylvania Avenue to drain from that area. Of course, they had to replace and redo that one too.
Less than adequate, isn't it?
Less than adequate.
Not planning much for growth.
And the reason that they took the storm stuff out to the east was that there is a dip down there from Y Avenue down a hollow like this, up to the riverbank. And they were afraid that they'd flood everybody out by the pipes breaking if they took all that water down that way and dumped it in the river somewhere out the other way.
How about swimming pools?
Oh.
You had some first-hand knowledge of that.
Okay, a Crystal Plunge was located on the west side of the 2nd Street Viaduct, north of the railroad track. I think the city uses that as a storage space now. And they had a...
Who had the idea of putting it in there?
Well, as I understand it, they either had an artesian well there finally, and I don't know who had the idea. I was just a kid when I was swimming down there. Except I remember the water was cold. It wasn't very warm. But, and I don't know when it disappeared, a long time back.
Describe it a little more.
Oh, gosh. Just a concrete hole in the ground. I can't describe it any better now. I don't remember anything about
25 by 30, something like that?
I would guess probably closer to 40, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. And you might be right about the width. I have no idea.
Do you think that with the artesian well, that that was the only means of changing the water? They didn't use chlorine or any other purifier?
Well, who needed chlorine back in those days?
Well,
I'm not even sure they put anything in the city drinking water at that point.
Mm-hmm. Was this a pool frequented mainly by young boys?
Oh, no. Kids of all sizes and varieties. And I guess some adults, too. I don't remember so much about that. But
Was it open maybe 5 or 6 months in the year?
Yeah, I think 5 would be stretching it quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
4 might have covered it. You got to remember, the water wasn't warm.
Yeah.
First of all, and come September, the days aren't too warm either.
Right.
Sometimes around here.
Did you ever hear of an accident where a boy was killed there?
No, not that I recall. The only accident I remember of a kid dying was from a Schultz kid, I think, from an expedition from Willow School, and fell down Devil's Slide up there just above Orville.
Mm-hmm.
And that I don't remember because I was going to school somewhere else at the time.
Well, why do you think the Crystal Plunge closed?
I couldn't give you a good reason. Sometimes the facilities just plain wear out, or, you know, nowadays somebody come along and condemn the place,
yeah.
Probably. But I couldn't tell you why.
Could it have been a money loser?
Probably.
Was there a place to change your clothes there, or any?
There had to be that. In connection with the swimming pool, you had to have a place to change.
Well, you could put your bathing suit on at home and bike down there, I suppose.
Yeah, I suppose you could.
I guess there were
people that did.
I was wondering about amenities. Was it just a plain pool of water, or was there anything else that was in a part of the attraction there?
I don't remember on that one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I presume they had a diving board, but I don't remember for sure.
How many times do you think you went there?
Not enough to get much etched in my memory, I guess.
Mostly when you were quite young?
Yeah, I would have been... This would have been probably during the time that we lived up on 3rd Street, and I was in the 6th and 7th grade when we were there.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd have been, 13, 14,
yeah.
Somewhere along
yeah.
in there.
By the time you were in college, was it closed?
I couldn't tell you. I think probably it was.
Of course, you were less interested in using it at that age, I'm sure.
Well, I got to the place, you know, where you could drive, you could go to Cove.
Yes.
Cove was a little bit warmer water.
Mm-hmm.
And I could tell you more about the facilities there than I could about Crystal Plunge.
All right, let's talk about Cove. How many times did you go there?
I don't remember, except that Royal Morton was a good guy and he never ratted on any kid that had skipped school to go to his swimming pool.
Morkgren, Borkgren?
I think so.
Mm-hmm.
The last time I saw them, she was down at OHSU, and this was 1978, and she was down there to have some kind of cancer treatment, and I don't know what, and I never did see them after that. Of course, they sold the facility.
They had run the pool for quite a number of
years,
hadn't they?
Yeah. In fact, it has changed. when he was running it, there was a big log that ran across the center of the pool from the side where the changing rooms were and the diving tower, clear across the pool. And in those days, it wasn't verboten for somebody to get up on there and walk across the pool and dive in from the log or whatever.
What was the log intended for?
I don't know. It was just there.
It sounds as though if you were diving off the diving board, you might hit it.
No, the diving board was far enough to the north side of it that you had no problem. In fact, the tower, the little tower that they had was far enough to the side that there would have been no problem. I think you went up the steps this way and could climb up on the log, but the tower took you on up this way, so you were several feet away from the log. And it was about the same level as the tower, so you know, it was here and the tower was over here, so there wasn't any problem with that.
From your perspective, what were the attitudes people had about the Cove Pool?
Hey, it was a great place for kids and for people. I know that a lot of fellows that worked in the harvest or whatever over at Cove would end up in the swimming pool in the evening.
Sure.
Place to, I guess, should I say, cool off and clean up?
Yeah.
A lot
of
maybe you got to shower before you got in.
Yeah.
And Royal was just a nice guy. I saw him. Fish. Niece and my first wife out of the pool. The kid didn't have any fear, and she just went right out and jumped into the deep end of things. Couldn't swim, but he had the stuff to fish him out with, and I suppose that that was the only one he'd done that way. But from Le Grand, Harvey Carter organized a group of us, and we went over there and took the life-saving course that they taught at the time. And so that was in connection not only with, I guess, community stuff, but the scouts, that's where the life-saving, all the testing took place and the training for it and so on for the life-saving merit badge.
What information do you have about how the Cove Pool got started? It seems to me there would have had to be a pretty substantial capital investment in the first place.
I don't have the slightest idea. It was there when I discovered it, and I don't know.
It probably goes back about 100 years, doesn't it?
Well, let me see. I can go back before 1940. I can go back 65 for sure.
Yeah.
And I don't think it wasn't a new facility then, although Royal drained the pool and saw that it was scrubbed down and cleaned, and he kept the maintenance up and that sort of thing, so I have no idea how old it was.
Did you hear people considerably older than you talking about having gone there?
Hey, there aren't very many people around who are getting older than I
am. No, I mean at the time, but when you were 18 or 20, did you hear...
At that age, you don't pay much attention to older people.
That varies with individuals. Some are more observant than others.
Well, I think that I was too much concerned with the guys that I was with rather than the older people.
I see.
But, yeah, they... In fact, well, let me see. If I remember correctly, this is a story from the background. My mother and dad and my Uncle Walt went swimming over there. And something that my Uncle Walt did rubbed my mother's foot against the, you know, the rough, it was not really smooth finished concrete on the walls in places. Rubbed her toes against the wall of the con and took off a corn, and she never went back again. That's all I can remember about older people.
She limped away with a bloody foot, huh?
Oh, well, the corn missing anyhow. But I don't ever remember my mother or dad going swimming.
Was it at that time a place for family reunions or gatherings?
He had a facility, a little park facility up away from the pool. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I took this is where we could go for end of the year picnics. In fact, I think the last I remember from here, Harvey and so on, I think a bunch of 8th grade kids, I was riding one of them, went over there. But they stopped taking the grandkids, you know, insurance became a big proposition, and lawsuits and so on, so that quit. But I took Inwood kids over there, along with mothers and so on, and they swam in the morning. We had our picnic and barbecue, and they swam in the afternoon, got sunburned real well. And he had a place up away from the swimming pool. I think they closed it off, but you could go up a little road, and he had a park area back there. And I think he had some, I remember he had some teeter totters in there, type of thing. And then, of course, you had the area down by the pool where you had mm-hmm. these little barbecue stand things. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you family picnics, a lot of family picnics over there, as far as I know.
At the time that you were visiting the pool, you probably observed Cove itself, the town. Were there features of that that stick in your memory?
Well, the school was there on the corner before they built across the street to the new one.
Yeah.
But I don't remember. I don't think we paid much attention to town. We're too busy heading for the pool. Of course, the gravel road in there.
Until recently.
Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. For the most part.
Were you aware at all of the Ascension Camp?
No, we'd come in the other way, and you never got down to Ascension Camp. Going in on the highway and coming back that way.
Mm-hmm. What were you? Did you ever hear anything about the Ascension Camp?
Not particularly.
Is that because it was Episcopal?
No, it's because it's 15 miles away. I didn't know they had another one up above Cove either, but I think that belongs to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
There's another church camp up there, you know, up above the swimming pool.
I guess I didn't know that.
Yeah, they're still there. Huh. I don't know whose that is, for sure.
And then there was the Pine Cone Swimming Pool.
Yeah.
Did you go there often?
Oh, every once in a while. We'd ride up there on our bicycles. And I think they got the water for that from the Grand Ronde River. And of course it is located where the highway weighing station is now about.
Yes.
And they had an auto camp, I think they called it.
Yeah.
We call it a motel now, in connection with the swimming pool. And Ingram's had that at the time, I remember, and they had a son named Bud that had a motorcycle. And we'd be, some of us youngins would be in the pool, and we'd see him get on that motorcycle, and of course you could hear it. And he'd ride up toward Perry, and then pretty soon we'd see him coming back down the highway, standing on the seat of his motorcycle, which none of us wanted to try. But they had a tower there on the east end of that pool, and dressing rooms, and beyond that I don't remember too much.
You remember how much it cost to get in?
No, but it couldn't have been very much, or we'd have been limited completely.
Riding your bicycles out there, this would have been a road that vehicles were using
been on
to
the
travel.
Old highway.
Yeah, traveling to Portland, and fairly heavily traveled, wasn't it?
Didn't seem to me like we got past all that often on a bicycle. Mm. You know, freight trucks basically didn't exist at that time.
Right.
There might have been some, but basically they didn't exist. Mm-hmm. Gasoline tankers did, but they came in, you know, rarely, I suppose. But we followed the same rules as the cars did. We didn't ride on the wrong side of the street like a lot of characters in Le Grand do nowadays, including adults, which, if I understand correctly, is illegal, but it's still done.
Yeah.
And I don't know why it started. But, you know, it just gave us a little exercise. One thing about it is we could coast quite a bit of the way back to town.
Oh, yes. Were there other places to stop at or loiter at on the way to and from that pool?
Well, I suppose you could stop anywhere and loiter, but no, there wasn't anything. From the time you left Gangloff Park until you got to Pine Cone, there really wasn't anything, although you could get off the side of the road. There's a place under and near the old railroad trestle across the highway where you could get off the side of the road. You could go up, I think it was Bear Creek, which took off down in that corner, but there wasn't anything along there.
No place to fish along the way?
Well, there's water. Yeah, you could fish, but when you got a swimming suit, you're not really into fishing. Mm-hmm. You've got something else in mind, I guess.
Yeah. Did you remember seeing the brickyard on any of those trips?
I know where it was located. And I know that a lot of bricks came out of there. But the brickyard was down under the highway. We're up here on the highway, and it's clear down here on the flat.
You weren't curious enough to go down there and get a closer look?
We're just a bunch of bricks to kids, and no, we weren't concerned about it particularly.
There was steam coming out and a lot of noise, I imagine.
I don't remember any particular noise. There could have been, but you got the railroad tracks down there below that. And they're running, remember, a lot of steam locomotives at that time.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think probably railroad noise would have blacked that out a lot of time.
Yeah.
Because your engineer would be up toward that end of the track heading west, and he'd toot that whistle to get a high ball so the conductor at the rear end could signal him, yeah, yes, we're cleared to go. And I never did get down into the brickyard when I was a kid.
But you were aware of it?
I don't know, maybe.
I suppose by the time you were noticing those things that the bricks were being brought from the brickyard on trucks rather than with horse and wagons.
Oh yeah.
Do you remember seeing any buildings apparently being built with bricks that has been made there?
You get better new information out of Jack Jensen on that probably than you would from me. I don't remember. I don't even know where a lot of the bricks came from. I know they began to ship them in from Utah or Idaho or something, or railroad car of them even later on. I don't know anything that was built with bricks. I could have looked up maybe where the bricks for the old tabernacle came from and how many of those they had and so on. They had thousands of them. But beyond that, I don't know. I didn't pay much attention to what they were building with bricks, except I know Leo Hansen was a good bricklayer back in those days.
Uh-huh. I have a picture of him with the YMCA building. I think he was the one who laid the brick for that.
I don't even remember where
was. That became the Oddfellows Hall.
Oh,
it was
okay.
Across from the Sacramento Annex where the parking lot
was. Yeah, in between that and the fire station. Yeah.
Yep.
Now that was built before I remember, because it seems to me I was in there, I took some guitar lessons or something one time, and I think that's where the fellow had his pastor studio. I don't remember for sure. That's the only time I was ever in there.
I know that there was a gym and a swimming pool in there when it was a YMCA, but that was before you were doing such things. It was built in 1914.
Well,
and I don't think it remained a YMCA for very many years.
Yeah, I didn't start swimming for probably upwards of another 18 to 20 years.
Yeah. You do remember the building, though.
Oh, yes.
Because it wasn't too long ago that it was knocked down.
Didn't it go down that whole block on the
very
near the Washington Street side? I remember.
Yeah. Yeah. During the time you were living in La Grande as a younger man, later too, what were some of your observations about politics, how politics was done around here?
I will have to go back to a more recent age for that. I was told that most of the politicking took place in Graham's drugstore for a long time. That's where McGlashan's is now.
Yes.
And when it went out of there, the politicians moved down to DuBord's, which was in Pat's Alley. In fact, early one morning took my car in to be service of Goss's, and I hadn't had breakfast. I went over for breakfast, and what did I do? I ended up with in breakfast time here with all of the wheels in town in for breakfast, and that's about all I know about politics.
Well, I'm sure you read articles in the newspaper.
I was told by a school superintendent one time, I forget which one, that he had a list of 20 people, and if those 20 people were in favor of the school budget, it would pass. He never did tell me which 20.
Did this give you the impression that politics in La Grande, or maybe all of Union County, was kind of a boss system? A few people calling the shots?
Well, let's put it this way. Rather than the boss system, it was a few big frogs in a little puddle. And, well, for example, old man Smith, that's Gordon Fitz Smith's grandfather, came to La Grande. He was looking for a site for this pea cannery that they eventually built in Pendleton. He came to La Grande, told him what he was looking for, so on. And he did the same in Pendleton. And he told them that he would be back at his home in Ogden at a certain time. The Pendleton delegation was down there with the deed to the property where Melody Square is now when he got back. And if I recall correctly, La Grande didn't even give him an answer. Now that told you about the politics.
Do you generalize it beyond that? Has that been the approach that people in La Grande have taken to other kinds of projects?
Well, were you back here when they started talking about the correctional facilities, the prison and so on?
I knew about that.
Okay. The wheels in La Grande didn't want to have anything to do with it. So, where is it? Over there next to Ontario, where the Idaho governor swears at us occasionally for having put it so close.
Yes.
And where does the crime in the state take place, basically? In the Willamette Valley area. It doesn't make sense to me to put a prison over in Ontario when you got to transport most of your people clear across the state. And
what is there about grand management or attitudes toward civic projects that so often has seemed to place La Grande behind the curve?
Well, I don't know. I think it's kind of the attitude that I saw displayed down in Fort Worth when I was in the service. I had a rail stop over there, and here's a sign in the window close to the depot, and it says, "Let's keep the business in Fort Worth. Dallas is big enough." And I think that's the sense. La Grande is big enough. Because
if it were bigger, there'd be more problems?
Sure.
Is that the idea?
Sure, but there'd be more jobs. Mm-hmm. Maybe the school population would be declining quite so badly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you always get more problems with more size, but then on the other hand, take a look at the expansion of the college. I walked over that hill before there was any college building on it. And then they started out small with just the administration building. And then pretty soon they had Ackerman School and the gymnasium, and that's all they had to start with. Well, you can go ahead and take a look at the other stuff. They're still building. And they've taken in everything between 6th Street and 12th. Well, not 12th, because the cemetery takes out that chunk, but that and the armory and so on. They've taken in that territory clear up to C Avenue. And maybe eventually it'll expand. Oh, eventually. Dean finally made it out. What else we got on here? Oh, the high school.
Yeah, I'd like you to talk as much as you're willing to about your experience in being a teacher in the LeGrand system.
Well, you had good days and you had bad days.
Well,
and you had
good that's
kids
true
and
everywhere.
You had bad kids.
Yeah, yeah, I know about that.
And you've been there. There were times when I did a shocking thing to the school board. I went, they thought they were doing real well by the teachers, and we got out the charts of the other places of comparable size in the state, you know, beginning and salary schedules and so on, and kind of floored them because they weren't doing as well by us as they thought they were. But I've seen the time when they were ready to go with what they thought the teachers ought to have, what the teachers were agreed on, and I've seen other times when I won't mention any names because he's got descendants living in town, but I had to thought, remember the budget board go out of a meeting where they'd given the teachers a $200 raise and it doesn't matter and all that because they got it. So, you know, back and forth. And I never had very much to do with the board did because here's the superintendent and he's the one that deals with the board. And he's the one that deals with the teachers. And I did have a lot to do with one of the superintendents because I happened to be the Education Association president for a year, way back when. But I didn't have any difficulties in dealing with him. I just found one procedure for dealing with him, though. If you had something to suggest that meant a change or consideration or whatever, don't ask him for an immediate answer. Give him a few days. He'd more likely to say yes if you gave him a few days. The automatic answer is no. That seems to be, I've experienced that in other situations. That seems to be a management fallibility. They want time to decide.
Yeah.
All the time. Mm-hmm. And if it's reasonable, a lot of times they'll go along with you if they've got a little time to think it over.
I don't think there's anything about unique about LeGrand in that respect.
No, probably not, except that when they were considering building the new high school building, well, some of us made it to a board meeting and we tell them some of the difficulties they're having in the old LHS. And you know, I talked about some of the things, and you know, the longer I talked, the bigger the eyes got, the more I could tell he didn't believe a word I was saying about the state of that building.
Tell me what some of those difficulties were.
Well, for one, I had a window. This was in the room on the southeast corner of the building, second floor. I had a window that I could not close by about 4 inches. So to keep the draft out from the wind that blows that direction, I had a towel stuffed in there in the wintertime. And the other windows were not really weatherproof totally. The floor joists had sagged in some places so that they're down this way and you come along and then they come up into place where they're held on the walls.
To the point of being dangerous, do you think?
Oh, they probably could have used that building for another 100 years and have still been in better shape than some of them I saw over in England. But,
well,
you know, it's just... Well, another thing that happened. I was in a room in the middle over the old library, you know, was a single story on the north side of the main structure. And I had a room up above that. And one, I guess, spring day, we had the windows open, fortunately, on the firehouse. I was a cannon blue. I didn't lose any glass, but it sure rattled the windows. And if I had to have them open and the door to the room open, it might have taken some glass out on those kids.
Are you making the case that the building really needed to be torn down, or...